From the heart of the Forest City, Blackburn Media presents the Craig Needles Podcast, looking at the biggest stories in London and around the world and how they impact you. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
Thanks for joining in here on the Craig Needles Podcast on a Tuesday. Glad you could download, subscribe, listen, whatever it is you're doing. If you're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever it is you're listening, on classicrock981.com, at londonnewstoday.ca, wherever it is you're listening, we really appreciate you doing that. And I want to talk about a subject that means a lot to me because I think it's really important. And I'm glad to talk about an absolute expert with it. That's Mike Moffat, who's an economist who I've talked to in many different formats. And he joins us here on the Craig Needles Podcast to talk about a new report that he has out about housing and the fact that it's become real expensive. Mike, thank you so much for doing the podcast with us today.
No, thank you for having me.
So the first thing I want to ask you about is just the subject, the name of the report, which I'm looking at right now. You did this for the Institute for Smart Prosperity, and it's called Forecast for Failure. That is, that's a report title that's a little bit troubling for a lot of folks. It expresses some concern. What are we talking about? What was the failure here?
So the failure is literally coming from forecasts. This is kind of a wonky topic, but it's incredibly important. So what Ontario calls the Greater Golden Horseshoe area. So that's, you know, the GTA, but also includes Barrie, Kitchener-Waterloo, the Niagara region, and so on. There's a growth plan that sort of governs, you know, how many houses should be built, transit, you know, all kinds of different things. This goes back to 2005. It's been updated a few times. And underpinning that growth plan is a set of forecasts on, you know, how many homes will be built, how many jobs will be created, and most importantly, how many people are going to settle in the Toronto area, right? And that informs, things like zoning policies, the number of affordable homes that gets built. All kinds of municipal plans are based on this provincial growth plan. And that provincial growth plan is based on a bunch of population forecasts. And what the report finds is that the population forecasts that underpin the 2017 growth plan massively underestimated the amount of population growth from international students and immigration to the GTA. So what basically happened is the growth plan said, okay, this is how many homes we're going to need. Well, it turned out that the GTA needed far more homes than that. And when those homes weren't built, you had a lot of families move out of the GTA and move places like London and Woodstock and so on. So this is what the report talks about. It's just basically that we have some real problems when it comes to forecasting. It's causing families to drive till they qualify across southern and southwestern Ontario. And we provide 10 recommendations of reforms to how we can avoid this from happening. And, you know, it's just kind of showing that the housing shortages that we see in southern Ontario are the result of policies that weren't totally well thought through.
Certainly not on a variety of levels. And it's frustrating because the people who have to essentially pay the piper for this are the people who want to get into the housing market, right? Because you say, okay, it's time for me to buy a home. I'm in that stage of my life. Or it's time for me to, you know, rent a place away from mom and dad's. I'm in that stage of my life. And you take a look around and you see that rents are through the roof in this area and other areas. You see that the cost of buying is essentially not reachable for a significant percentage of the population. And you realize that these policy errors have had a significant impact on a generation of people looking for housing.
Well, absolutely, because we've simply had too many people chasing too few houses. And again, this goes back to planning errors. So if you look at, you know, again, the Greater Golden Horseshoe area, you know, they had forecasted back for the 2017 growth plan that about 7,000 people a year would leave the Greater Golden Horseshoe and move to other parts of Ontario. Well, it ended up being 3 to 4 times that. So when you go and you're expecting, you know, 7,000 people to move out of the broad Toronto area, and it's closer to 25,000, you know, that gets a problem. So you have this effect where housing shortages in Toronto get transmitted to Kitchener-Waterloo, Kitchener-Waterloo starts to have housing shortages and high prices. So everybody moves to Woodstock, moves to London, and so on. So, you know, what happens in the GTA and what happens with the growth plan affects the areas of the province that aren't part of this plan.
The question becomes, what can we do to correct those errors? And hey, for some folks, those errors are not going to be correctable. They'll have paid a significant price for a house that may or may not be worth that not too far down the road. But what can we do to correct these errors?
So we provide 10 recommendations, but the first two are particularly important. The first one is that the forecasts, these sort of population forecasts, are usually updated every about 8 years or so. And what happens is they become out of date really quickly as federal policy changes. So as we change immigration targets or rules governing international students, these forecasts become out of date. And the policies of the growth plan subsequently becomes out of date. So what we're recommending is that these should be updated every single year, that we should have new numbers so we could update the growth plan as needed, but also just so we could assess our performance. So we know, okay, this is what we're supposed to be doing. Here's where we are. And if gaps start to form, then, you know, councilors and mayors can and the provincial government can go back to the drawing board and try and fix the problem instead of waiting till it's too late. The second thing that we recommend is that the growth plan should have a contingency buffer. So think of a government budget, right? That government budget says, okay, this is how much we're going to spend, and this is how much revenue we'll bring in, and this will be the size of the deficit. But they know they're not going to forecast that correctly, that, you know, maybe interest rates change or the economy doesn't do as well. So they build in what's called a contingency buffer, that, you know, to allow for space if there's unanticipated events. We're suggesting that the growth plan should have the same thing, that the growth plan should recognize that forecasts are never perfect and the costs of not building enough housing are quite high. So they should basically, you know, have this added space, you know, to sort of overestimate population growth. That way, if something happens, we already have enough houses there to accommodate that extra population.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. You give yourself some margin for error. And if we did with the last series of forecasts, they were so woefully off that the margin for error was completely blown past.
Yeah, exactly. Because there were essentially none. That the growth plan assumed that these forecasts on, you know, the number of homes, the size of the population, and job growth, that they would be perfect. But they're never perfect. You know, these things are always going to change, you know, either because federal policy changes or economic conditions change or whatnot. So the plans need to have a bit of humility baked in, so that way that there's some breathing room if something doesn't go according to plan, because, you know, something always doesn't go according to plan.
There was a meeting earlier in fact, this is just not very long ago at all, that Steve Clark, Doug Ford, they have this meeting. Steve Clark, of course, the Minister of Municipal Affairs and Housing, and they have all the big city mayors in Ontario. They're talking about, okay, we've got some housing issues here. What do we do? How do we move forward from this? What were your thoughts on what came out of that? And are they talking about the right things?
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic on both that meeting. You know, there's always a concern when you have an issue as big and contentious as this one, that these meetings turn into finger pointing, where, you know, the mayors blame the premier and the premier blames the mayors. That at least the public facing of that, we hadn't seen that much. That it does look like they're trying to work together. And as well, the premiers had a task force looking at these issues. And, you know, full disclosure, we had presented some of our work to that task force. That task force has a report coming out in a few weeks, a copy of which has already been leaked to some members of the media. And it looks promising as well about a set of reforms. So obviously, you know, these things need to get enacted, and, you know, we need to see the final versions of this. But, you know, I feel like all levels of government have at least crossed that barrier where, you know, they're willing to admit there's a problem. They're willing to admit that they personally need to be doing more, and they're starting to look for solutions. So, you know, I think this is a good sign.
You mentioned it a little bit already, but here in London, how does the fact that we have really messed up some of these forecasts wind up impacting us? If there's an exodus from places like that, especially as we look into the future here with, I would suspect, more remote working options, if you're doing a job in Toronto and you only have to actually be in the office one day a week, maybe you can live in a place like London. So does that mean that we have an even larger burden on London's housing market and therefore the prices continue to go up?
Yeah, and that's a real irony about all of this, that, you know, the effects of, you know, bad forecasts for the greater Golden Horseshoe area actually had more of an impact on the areas outside of the greater Golden Horseshoe because of all of these families moving in. And again, this was happening before the pandemic, that you had this sort of exodus of young families with young kids moving out of the Toronto area and locating to London and across southwestern Ontario. And as you point out, that this has only escalated during the pandemic, that we're seeing, the city of London, but also, Kamoka and Lucan and surrounding areas see an even greater influx of families because, you know, it was one thing where if you had to commute every single day to Toronto or maybe 2 to 3 days a week, then, you know, living in London may be less attractive. But now, if you can, if you can work from home all of the time and maybe you just have to go in once a month, that's a really attractive option. So absolutely, what's happening in Toronto affects London, and more so now with the advent of work from home.
And that being the case, what do we do here in London and other places like London in order to stem the tide here? And I suppose the answer is going to be, hey, you've just got to build more housing.
You just got to build, and that has to filter into the municipal plan. So it's making sure that there's enough land available. It's making sure that the zoning allows for enough infill. Because London, London is going to see growth twice. The first, again, is the sort of influx of residents from the GTA. But a lot of the population growth that we're seeing across Ontario is coming from higher education. Is coming from our colleges and universities. And both Western and Fanshawe have seen their international student populations grow substantially. And I think the important thing to recognize is that for a lot of the international students, it's not, okay, they come here, they graduate, and they leave. Instead, that colleges and universities are used as a pathway to permanent residence. So a student will go to Fanshawe, get a diploma, is then eligible to work in Canada for up to 3 years under the post-graduation work permit program, and then apply for permanent residency under express entry. So we shouldn't kind of think like, oh, well, they're just students and they'll go off. That this population growth from international students at Fanshawe and Western, a lot of them are looking to make a permanent home in London. And I think that's a fantastic thing. You've got some of the brightest, most ambitious people in the world going, you know what? London's the place I want to be. That's great. We just need to make sure that there's enough homes so all those people who want to live in London can live in London.
And if that's going to be the case, we're going to have to do, like you said, more infill. And I've got concerns about some of the sprawl that we've seen or may see in this community. We've got some really valuable farmland around London. I'm going to do a podcast about this in a few weeks, but we've got some really valuable farmland around London. I don't want to be paving over that or building houses on top of that. So that means, hey, you've got to build out. And that means that you've got to be receptive from a planning perspective when someone says, hey, I want to build a big tall tower somewhere in downtown London or near Fanshawe College or near Western or wherever it happens to be.
Yeah, exactly. And that's really important to understand that housing shortages eventually resolve themselves. Like the houses eventually get built. People need somewhere to live. But if you don't sort of plan for those in your cities, houses get built where they're easiest to get built from a regulatory point of view. And a lot of times that's in rural areas. There's just less red tape. There's less NIMBYism. So you start to see, small communities all over the place start to build a lot of housing and, start to pave over some of the best farmland on the planet. We are, last estimates were that we were losing 175 acres of farmland in Ontario every single day to property development. And that's because our municipal plans in our cities like London don't allow for enough infill. And it's not necessarily just towers, but it's, you know, things like missing middle, triplexes, that kind of thing. That if you don't plan for the growth in the city, the growth is still going to happen, but it's going to happen where the least amount of red tape, and invariably that tends to be in smaller communities.
Yeah, and that's the part that's frustrating for me. And look, and you and I have both gone back and forth with some London City Councilors about this on the Twitter before, but I just look at this and think to myself, from the environmental perspective, from the cost perspective, from the lack of paving over farmland perspective, like, these councilors for the most part agree with us on this statement, but making it easier to build big, tall things in the middle of the city is better for all of those fronts. And that to me is why we've got to be focusing on that.
Yeah. And unfortunately, and this is not just a London thing, but this is across Ontario, that there's this viewpoint that a lot, you know, this sort of implicit viewpoint that a lot of councilors have is just like, it's not sprawl if I can't see it, or it's not sprawl if it's not within our municipal boundaries. Right. So it's like, okay, you make building tight, really tight in London. And then, you know, a bunch of people, you know, move out to St. Thomas and then drive back to London for their jobs. Well, you haven't really done anything. You know, that doesn't help sprawl at all. That makes it worse, right? Because you have to build all this infrastructure, highways, and so on. So there's this weird kind of paradox where if you build a high rise like four blocks from City Hall, that's considered sprawl. But if you got families moving out to Lucan or Whalen's Corners or wherever and driving back to their jobs at University Hospital or wherever, that's not considered sprawl because it's outside of the municipal boundary. So it's just, it's a really warped way of thinking about things.
The Whalen's Corner shout out, I really enjoyed, by the
way. Well, I had to. Still got family out there.
So how do you think this goes for the next few years? And maybe it's hard to see, but we're going to have to adjust where we're building and what we're doing. But as we just talked about, there's a pandemic that's part of this, and who knows exactly when we come out of that or what things are like when we come out of that. There's that element of unpredictability to it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the big features of that unpredictability is just what you mentioned on work from home. We don't know what that looks like 2 to 3 years from now. You know, if all of these employers, you know, once hopefully the pandemic comes to an end eventually, you know, are those employers wanting to have everybody back in the office? Are the employees going to say, oh, you know what? I really feel like I should be in the office because, you know, kind of out of sight, out of mind, and I'm worried I might not get that promotion if the bosses don't see me. And that's going to affect the choice of where people have to live. So there's so many kind of known unknowns right now. But I think one of the things that we have to do, again, is change our zoning rules, allow for more missing middle. And a lot of that actually might not even necessarily come from the municipalities. It actually might come from the province. We've seen, you know, the Ford government talk about this, but the opposition parties, both Liberals, NDP, and Greens, have also kind of mentioned, you know, changing the overall provincial rules to allow, you know, make duplexes a right everywhere. Doesn't mean that duplexes would be everywhere, but just that if you had a piece of land and you wanted to build a duplex, you could. So, you know, I think we are going to see changes at the municipal and provincial level, because I just think, you know, the tide has changed and people are just so fed up. I saw some polling data from Abacus on the sort of performance of the provincial government. And, you know, the two things that Ontarians were most upset about were, one, the pandemic, but two, issues around cost of living, including cost of housing. So I just feel like we're at a point where, you know, mayors and the provincial government really can't ignore this issue and really can't just play lip service to it, that they're going to have to do something transformative.
Yeah, because in a way, it's kind of transformed the way a lot of folks live and the way that a lot of us go about our lives. You and I are both parents. We both have a couple of kids. And I was struck by a graph that you tweeted out about 10 days ago. Population, City of Toronto, children under the age of 5. In 2001, 150,000 children under the age of 5 lived in the City of Toronto. Now, that number is hovering just above 130,000. Now, if you look at the rest of the population, the City of Toronto, that number has gone way, way up. But children under the age of five, it's gone down by 20,000. I was very struck by that.
Yeah, and it's gone up in other areas. So yep. so what's basically been happening, and this is a fairly new phenomenon. It's mostly been since about 2015 or so, that as Toronto has gotten really expensive, and you know the properties that are built are often one bedroom condos in high rises, which you know that are expensive, and people are going like, well, if I'm paying $700,000 for this, I don't want to raise a family here if I can just move to Brantford or wherever. So you've got all of these families either leaving the GTA or as well that birth rates in the GTA have fallen substantially because people are just saying like, well, actually I like Toronto, I like my job here. So I'm just not going to have kids, or I'm going to postpone having children for an extra 2 or 3 years. So we're seeing this change of where children are across the province, that you've got a big decline in Toronto, a smaller but still significant decline in the Peel region. And then areas like London, like Woodstock, like Stratford, you see these increases. And, you know, again, this goes back to the sort of planning issue. It's one of the reasons why we've got, you know, elementary schools in London, brand new elementary schools that have more portables than classrooms, that mm-hmm. we hadn't really planned for this transition.
Yeah, or we look at areas sort of the north end of the city where they've just built a school, and now all these parents are saying, oh, you know what we need is another school. Like, well, okay, like, you know, we just built one, but I guess we need one more. Okay.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, our you know, to take it back to the forecast of failure, mm-hmm. our report is just on the housing side. But there's an equal sort of issue around forecasting to failure on the need for schools and parks and other amenities and how we actually fund those schools. Like oftentimes, you know, you actually have to have the kids in the neighborhood before you can actually even think about having a school. So there's just so many, you know, incoherent sort of policies where, you know, we're not really understanding how, you know, how international student policies relate to housing policies, relate to the need for elementary schools and so on. And, you know, it's just, it causes a lot of things. Like it causes high housing prices, but it also just causes, you know, diminishing quality of life, where you have all these kids getting, you know, all these urban kids getting bussed around all over the place, or, you know, having to be in a portable instead of a regular classroom, you know, not being able to access the playground or the gym because it's so crowded. So, you know, we really need to address these issues to give our kids the best possible quality of life.
I'll ask you this before we wrap up, Mike, but if you're someone who is looking to get into the housing market right now, if you're in London or outside of London, wherever it is you're looking, what advice would you have for folks who are in that situation? It's a tough spot to be in right now.
It absolutely is. And, you know, although house prices have steadily risen for a while, you know, I'm thinking that there's a chance, you know, there's no guarantees in life, but there is a chance that there may be a small correction. I think the long-term outlook for housing prices is pretty strong, but with just the amount things have increased in the last little while, and one of the things we're seeing in the data is an increase in the number of people who own two homes. So a lot of those people who are moving in from Toronto are actually still have their Toronto property. They still have their Toronto condo, but they have a home in London as well. We very well may see when the pandemic is over, some of those dual property owners decide to sell one of those properties. We don't know whether it'd be the Toronto property or the London property, but there's a very good chance as the pandemic starts to end that we start to see some more resale homes come onto the market, which hopefully should ease pricing pressure somewhat.
Well, here's hoping, because I know a lot of people are hoping to own a home at some point in the not too distant future, and we'll see what happens for them. Anything else, Mike, from the report that you want to mention or highlight before we wrap up here?
Well, again, it's just how much policy matters. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, how much we need to have our municipal government, our provincial government, our federal government, and our, you know, our higher education institutes working well with each other. You know, that was one of the big themes that came out of this, is just seeing how much of a disconnect there were between different levels of government. So I think we need to demand better, and we need to demand, you know, that our politicians put aside their partisan differences and work together on issues that affect all Londoners and all Ontarians.
Yeah, I hope for the very, very same thing. Where can people find the report, by the way, if they want to take a look at it?
Oh, so it's at the Smart Prosperity Institute. So just Google Smart Prosperity Institute and you will find the report.
Awesome. Thanks so much for this, Mike. I appreciate the conversation. Subject's important to me. I know it's important to you, too. So I'm glad that we could talk it out here on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
That's economist Mike Moffitt here on the Craig Needles podcast. You can find him at Mike P. Moffitt on Twitter, and he's all over the place and does all sorts of stuff. So you know where to find Mike. You know where to find Mike. That's all the time we've got for this week. Thank you very much for doing the podcast with us this week. We got some big news in London on Monday. That's that the Brier is coming here. I'm pretty excited about it. And I'm not a huge curling guy. I enjoy watching, but I'm not a huge curling guy. But I'm excited about the Brier. I'll tell you about it, why I'm so excited about the Brier on Friday's podcast. Hopefully you can tune in for that on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, if you're doing the podcatcher thing, or of course at londonnewstoday.ca or classicrock981.com.
The Craig Needles Podcast is a presentation of Blackburn Media.